Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
Oh, I've got some great shows on the horizon for you in the coming weeks. I do. Next Tuesday, I'm going to release the audio and video of an online speech I recently gave. It's called America is Not a Christian Nation. Now, I'm kind of irritated that I have to continue to have this conversation. I feel the same way that you do. Because, you know, we see Dr. Robert Jeffress, First Baptist Church, Dallas, Texas, doing a whole sermon called America is a Christian Nation. You see the Tucker Carlsons and the Franklin Grahams and the Donald Trumps and Fox News and everybody else, you know, all the evangelical Christians. And they're like, we are a Christian nation. This country belongs to us. Okay. Once again, I go back and systematically dismantle this notion that we are a Christian nation. Yes, we get into the founding fathers and the Constitution, but we also get into some stuff that you and I normally don't talk about. And I think it's going to be a good resource that releases next Tuesday. The week after that, I'm going to read a whole chapter of my new book, Confessions of a Former Fox News Christian. I'm going to read a whole chapter of the audiobook for you for free. In August, I'm talking to John Musgrave. He is a Vietnam veteran. The guy was freaking shot in the chest and expected to die. And he came out of the Vietnam experience to ultimately become a war protester. Now, I thought that this conversation was relevant because we're talking a lot about patriotism and protest these days. I mean, there's a whole section of people. Hell, the people I just mentioned, you know, Jeffress and Graham and Trump and Fox News, where if you take a knee or you march in the streets in front of the White House or whatever, you are un-American, you're a traitor, you're not a patriot, you hate your country. And of course, a lot of people will look at me and say, I have no credibility on this subject, right? I've never been to war. I've never been part of an oppressed minority. Fine. I'm going to talk to John Musgrave, served as a Marine in Vietnam, a guy who used to hate protesters, who became a protester with Vietnam Veterans Against the War. He has a hell of a story. He's going to join me coming up in August. John Steingard, former lead singer of the Christian band Hawk Nelson. You saw those headlines a few weeks back. He came out as a non-believer in God. And that story went global. Well, I reached out to John and he was game to have a conversation. So we're going to talk on the broadcast. I'm going to talk to a lead singer of a Christian band who is no longer lead singer of a Christian band. I'm sure the whole industry is praying for him. Oh, we pray that he'll come back to Jesus kind of thing. Well, what's John's perspective on all of that? Does he call himself an atheist? What happened to the band? What happens to his life post-God? John Steingard on the roster. Anyway, that's just a taste of what's on the horizon. So you want to make sure and check in with me every single week for this stuff. Before I get into my conversation today with Vila Bianca, she's co-host of Talk Heathen and Secular Sexuality, I wanted to mention that I've been kind of browsing these Twitter conversations with some of my fellow activists and creationists. I mean, like young Earth creationists. The planet's 6,000 to 10,000 years old and dinosaurs are on the ark and whatnot. I mean, those people still exist in 2020. But also, we're seeing a lot of the intelligent design crowd, and so they've morphed their arguments to accept, to a degree, the science of evolution. They take that watchmaker position. I think that's fascinating and hugely ironic. Their arguments are having to adapt to survive. Like, is that not the most ironic thing that you have heard today? Well, adaptation for survival. By the way, we don't fully accept evolution as science. Evolution, an intimidating topic. Most of us, we're not paleontologists, we're not geologists, we're not cosmologists. It's why I've been glued to Dr. Anthony Martin's series at the Great Courses Plus called Major Transitions in Evolution. He goes way deeper than the Cambrian explosion. He gets into the basics, yeah, single-celled life to complex life, tracking these transitions from marine creatures to land creatures, our primate ancestors, and, you know, you and me, ourselves as primates, and even as a lecture on the dinosaurs. It's just a crazy good resource on evolution. It is available along with thousands of other lectures on a host of topics at the Great Courses Plus, streaming video to your computer, your TV, your tablet, or via the Great Courses Plus app. I'm so thankful for their support of this broadcast. I'm a true believer. I know you're going to love the Great Courses Plus as much as I do. So don't wait any longer. Now is the perfect time to sign up and start exploring with your free trial at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. This conversation started out on video. There is a YouTube link in the description box in case you'd like to watch. So honored to have my special guest for just a candid conversation today. It's V. LaBianca. Hi, V. Good to have
you.
Hello.
I'm excited to be here.
V is one of the hosts of Talk Heathen and Secular Sexuality. I think there are YouTube pages for both of those, right? Is that the main platform for those shows?
Yes. Well, they both have their own YouTube pages through the ACA. I am still developing my own YouTube page, and if this is coming out in a couple of weeks, probably that'll be up by this time. But
okay, well, if you're
no
up and running, I'll make
yet.
Sure the link is in the description box. So you're going to do a broadcast where you are sort of the primary host / admin / conversation starter.
Yes. It's going to be a little bit more scripted. It's going to have artwork. It's going to be a little bit different than what I do at the ACA. So I'm excited to dabble in an area I don't know much about yet.
Now, when you say ACA, for those who aren't familiar, the Atheist Community of Austin, probably arguably most famous for the Atheist Experience television show, but you guys have a ton of broadcasts coming out of the ACA down there.
Oh, yeah.
Can you kind of talk to me about you, your background? I want to introduce you to this audience. Where are you from?
Sure.
What's you about? Kind of give us the skinny.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, I'm from Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, originally. Grew up there, homeschooled, Christian conservative household, oldest of six kids. So pretty different from my life now. I went to a Christian private school. About half an hour away from where I grew up, and ended up deconverting while I was there because my major was journalism. And there's this weird dichotomy that happens when you require pretty good journalism classes and also theology and biblical history classes at the same time. So you're taught to ask certain questions in one forum that are unacceptable in another. So questions like, is this a primary source? How do we know this happened? Is this biased? What other resources can you provide me? In one area gets you an A, the other area gets you mean looks from the professor. So it kind of started dawning on me that, okay, if this is the way we're supposed to think about the world, if this is presented as, you know, being skeptical as preferable, why is this area off limits? And what's happening there? What's hiding there?
So you are kind of an investigative reporter, which is weird.
Sure.
Because when you investigate a religion, right? I mean, that's when the house of cards starts to, most of us who come out of a faith culture, right? It's fake it till you make it. It's not pursue the lead and get the source and check their source. What a weird paradox.
I'm the anti-Lee Strobel.
Lee Strobel. Oh, God.
I'm sorry. That's not fair so early in the morning.
Apologists, right? God needs the same human beings who have screwed up everything else in the universe to explain what he's trying to say. And if you put all of the Lee Strobels in a room, they can't agree on the basics.
Oh, no.
So, tell me about the private school. You know, you and I have that in common. I mean, was it uniforms and all that, or?
No, it's considered one of the more liberal schools. So not Liberty, not Bob Jones, nothing that intense. It was founded on Anabaptist and Mennonite faith traditions. So very pacifist, very open-minded in certain areas.
Now, I thought the Anabaptists were pretty conservative-like.
Very conservative, but not like, at least in my experience, hasn't been spit in hellfire kind of conservative, more like quietly disapprove from the other side of the room while they deign not to talk to you. I learned later after graduating and talking with some friends who had gone on to actual either seminary or to pursue their master's in divinity, that my college was nicknamed in all of the other Christian school, the college in the closet, because out as something by the time they graduate, because it's the most liberal. And so
I'm sorry, I lost you on my, I don't know if the listeners lost you or the viewers, but I lost the last sentence that you said, and I want to make sure I get it. The other colleges were saying what about you?
Oh, sorry about that. My mic messes up sometimes. They were saying that the school I went to is known colloquially across other Christian schools as the college in the closet, because there's a significant portion of the student body that after they graduate come out in some way or another, either as LGBT or atheist or something.
Now, why do you think that is? I mean, we're no sociologists here, but you think it attracted people who were, I don't know, who were less binary? I mean, I'm not even sure how to ask the question, V. I mean, what's your perspective?
I think that probably its reputation as being a little bit more lenient and not necessarily like on the Liberty Bob Jones end of things, people who were already in the process of not feeling as devoted to the religion for some reason or another felt more comfortable going there. It was still a Christian option, but it wasn't necessarily like, you know, walk to the other side of the street if you see someone of another gender coming at you.
It's weird, VT, because I heard you say the word Mennonite, and I'm thinking, how does this liberalism, this sort of, you know, this non-fundamentalism happen with that? I guess they were their own animal then.
Yeah, it was founded in that way. It is pretty well established now. So I think the trajectory trended towards progressive, which was nice.
All right. I'm not trying to beat the dead horse. Everybody's probably screaming at this camera going, shut up, Seth. Nobody gives a shit about whether or not they were still Anabaptist-like whenever they're... Sorry, folks. That stuff interests me. You know, I took some journalism. I entertained the idea of a journalism degree when I was in school. And I don't know what it's like now. I would think it'd be worse. But back then it was like, okay, I could be a journalist if I want to make about $12,000 a year. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not exactly. I mean, you got to really want to be in journalism to do it for a living. Would you agree or disagree?
Honestly, I would disagree if the premise was get a journalism degree in order to get into journalism. Yes, don't do that. That probably is not a good idea. But a journalism degree actually has helped me a lot in other areas because of the skills that I've learned. So when I was first at the ACA, I was volunteering in the back office doing audio engineering and some video stuff because I had been trained in that. It was a very hands-on kind of almost like a practical kind of approach to it as opposed to a theoretical arts degree approach. So I learned a lot of valuable skills that then translated to everything else I've done. So haven't gotten into journalism myself, so I can't speak to the...
I get it. Well, I'm kind of the same. I will say I did speak to communication skills, using economy with your thoughts, being able to formulate ideas and communicate those in an effective way. You know, it's like when you're writing an article, you really have to say what you're going to say in the first three paragraphs kind of thing. And how do you...
Exactly.
So, I mean, I get what you're saying there.
Yeah. I was the one who edited everybody. All the English majors came to me for edits because I was the one with the structural view of things. How do you say this? How do you phrase this? How is the best way to communicate this information?
So as co-host of Talk Heathen, Secular Sexuality, as someone who participates as an activist, I mean, what's your thing? I mean, what's your area of focus right now?
Yeah, well, I'm still pretty new, so I think it's going to shift and change a little bit. Right now, I am focused on learning as much as I can from the amazing people who are on the shows with me and producing the shows and on the back end. So I'm just a sponge at this point, kind of aggregating as much information as I can. I can tell you what I don't like more than what I'm gravitating towards is... I dislike the assumption that being an atheist or being skeptical or having a platform like this entitles you to be mean to other people. And of course, there's always an element of that theatricalness on the show because we are entertainers as well as educators. But approaching people with care and empathy and understanding that I was right there with them. We've had callers who have called into the shows talking about the most out there stuff, and people are complaining that it's a Poe. It's somebody who isn't really believing this. It's just pulling our leg. And I'm thinking that's me 10 years ago, right? I believe those exact same things. So I can approach this person with a little bit more of an understanding of where they're coming from and at least try and use my experience to get at the root of maybe where they're coming from.
If you sense a pause, it's because I'm simply enjoying the flavor. It's sweet ambrosia to be able to hear someone who is saying, let's be kind whenever possible to one another. V, I've been going through it. I talk about this quite a bit on my shows. You know, it's a reflection of you and where you're at in your life when you have a platform and you produce content. You can't help it. It bleeds out. Mm-hmm. I'm exhausted with people being awful to each other. And I'm not talking about you see someone who's genuinely damaging other people and you have to go and speak out. From a position of leadership, you feel compelled. You know, I need to take a moral public stand on this issue. Instead, it is this tendency toward immediate escalation. I've been guilty of snark. I've got the snark thing going on. I mean, I'm...
Oh, no. When I was first coming out as an atheist and was still in that angry phase, your snark was cathartic, man. Like, I was listening to your first couple of seasons of this and feeling... it felt good, but...
So you felt that coming out, like, it's almost like, I hate to say the stages of grief, but... You come out and you're hot because you feel lied to, or you were lied to. Well, why were you angry?
No, exactly for that reason. I lost my childhood. My childhood was terrible, and I was not allowed to be a kid. I had been miseducated about the world and about other people, and I looked back and I disliked who I was because of the information I had been fed. Getting out from a very insular, self-centered approach, looking at what I saw to be very damaging effects of religion on society as a whole, and realizing this for the first time and kind of just grappling with this, the weight of that history and that social pressure. There was a lot of anger at first, and I did my best not to lash out at other people. But for myself, you know, listening to Hitchens. You know, it was like, good, that's scratching an itch that I needed scratched before I could move on and kind of come to grips with things and approach things from my own perspective.
It's funny too, because if you go back and you look at my early work, you can almost see like a, I don't know if it's an evolution, but you can certainly see chapters, right? You've got the snarky, pissy, satirical, I'm jabbing. And then I start to mellow, you know, about 3 years into it. And then lately I've been really more about humanism. I mean, we talk about religion, we talk about atheism, obviously the channel name. But it's you go through, I mean, you are always in a flux, aren't you? You're always sort of evolving, changing. I don't even know how to phrase that. Do you feel that, though?
I mean, you should be. Oh, yeah. If I ever feel like I'm stagnating or too set in a particular worldview, I get antsy. I get nervous.
So this brings us, though, to this, and the atheist quote-unquote movement, good luck defining it, by the way, because there's about 1,000 gears in a machine, and they work. It's weird, because these gears work in tandem for a larger goal, but they also function completely independently. And it's hard, you can't really quantify it very well if you say the atheist movement. But right. I see these arguments, I see website memes, I see people who are saying religion is a mental illness.
Yeah.
Ugh, V, I can't, I just want to crawl through the monitor and shake these people. Right? You and I weren't mentally ill when we weren't brain damaged when we were religious. Help me out on this.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak to this as somebody who does struggle with mental health completely separately. It's a completely separate thing. Certainly, I would say that the way I was raised contributed to the mental illness that I currently have to deal with. I have an anxiety disorder, and that was definitely affected by the idea that the rapture was going to happen at any point, and I'd probably be left behind to face the wrath of God while everyone I loved disappeared in the middle of the night. I'm not bitter. What are you talking about? No, but it is a very different thing altogether. One is conceptual and informational, and the other is chemical and neurological. There's
overlap.
Can we
talk a little bit about
the
anxiety? I mean, yeah. I remember there was a time in my life when I thought, you know, they're always telling you for generations, Jesus has been coming back at any moment. They say the prayer, like, if you died today, if Jesus came back tomorrow, would you join him in heaven? This is how, you know, Southern preachers talk.
Oh, yeah.
And I was always afraid of, I was infected with sin. So I would walk around, dear Lord, please forgive me for all my sins and cleanse me, because I felt like at any moment I had too much sin and I wouldn't qualify.
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell with you?
Oh, yes. No, I developed some very concerning OCD-type problems as a kid.
Now, let me stop you, B. Hang on just a second. I want to make sure you know, please don't feel obligated to share any more than you want to share about this.
Of course, of course.
Personal issue. I brought it up, but please, you determine the boundaries. I just have to say it, okay?
I appreciate that. I appreciate your thinking about that. This is fine. This is mostly in the past, and it's...
Okay. All right.
Other people deal with it too. Having somebody to talk about it feels good to the people listening. I hope so.
So you were, I mean, you were thinking I may not be worthy.
Yeah. Oh, constantly. And I also was living not only with an abuse of God, but because the God that I was introduced to as a kid had a spokesperson in my abusive father. That kind of escalated everything. So it was a at home and abroad, aka in heaven, kind of always concerned that you weren't good enough, you were doing something wrong, you were going to be punished. So there were points in my childhood where I was debilitated with guilt, and everything became a moral issue, whether or not I stood in a certain way, or the number of times I washed my hands, or how often I turned on lights. Like, these things became intense moral concerns that just were debilitating, and that thankfully has gone away. But yeah, there's residual anxiety there that has followed me to this day, just because everything feels weighted in a very intense way
It has to be frustrating to try to explain this to somebody on the outside, right? If they don't feel that anxiety, they don't feel those compulsions in their minds, often you'll hear, well, just come on, get over it, right? I mean, you know, logically, you can push through that. Now you're out of it. For them, it seems much easier than it really is.
Right. And of course, it's going to seem easier if they consider religion to be a mental illness and they've escaped religion with a thought about, oh, well, Noah's Ark didn't happen. Cool. Religion isn't real. That was easy. So all mental illness must be that easy to get over. I think that's one of the dangers of committing that category error and putting those on the same in the same diagram, if that makes sense.
Sometimes I think it comes from a position of sort of sad superiority, right? Well, you're just brain damaged and I'm enlightened. And they have that attitude about religious people. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you know, religious people can be hugely intelligent. In fact, many of these intelligent people they become even better at rationalizing the irrational because they are much better at constructing the mechanisms that explain it and defend it. And it's not an intelligence conversation. And that's something that I think a lot of people have a hard time. I mean, I wasn't an idiot. I mean, I wasn't that much of an idiot when I was a believer, V, you know? So, you mentioned your dad.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, I call it the battered bride of Christ. There's a lot of abusive language, ideology, attitudes, right? I mean, Yahweh, he's jealous and petty, but he's also ultimate love. He will punish you, but only because he is love. And when something bad happens, when he raises his hand to you, it's really your fault. It hurts him worse than it hurts you. He has to do this because he's just. You have no worth outside of him, so he determines your worth. You can't live without him. You know, whatever you do, don't leave me. You have to have me, or I'll come get you, and there will be consequences. This is classic abuser language, and it's all over Christianity, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. One of the very first things that kind of jostled me out of my faith was I had gotten out of my household enough to for college. So I left for a couple of years. When I came back, I was able to very clearly see, oh, this was normal to me back then. It's not normal. It's not okay. This is abusive. And so I was rationalizing that. And then I would go to church and there would be songs that people were singing that just made me so deeply uncomfortable because all of this concept of abuse and this language of control and manipulation was so present in my mind, dealing with the fact that this is what my family was going through, that of course I was going to make that connection and realize, like, oh, this is the same language. This is what is keeping my family in this position. They think that this is okay because they sing about it every Sunday as though it's ultimate goals.
Do you have any contact with your dad?
My dad actually committed suicide last year.
Now I feel terrible for bringing it up, V.
That's okay. I've talked about it a little bit on the show.
Okay.
This got very heavy very quickly. I apologize.
Okay. I mean, we're just talking. This is how I approach these conversations.
We
talk over coffee. And I just now had an oh shit moment, and I am sorry. I don't want to open a wound. So
that is okay. We had not been in contact for 5 years. So I had already kind of mourned the loss prior.
Feeling
that was tricky to navigate for sure, but it's not an open wound. So
it's a weird dynamic too. You realize that you weren't really family. I mean, not in the healthy sense, a family. And so the physical loss hits you in a weird way.
Right.
It almost felt
like the end of a book. So it felt very much like I wasn't sure if the book was over yet. And then that happened. I was like, okay, now I actually feel freer and more able to move on with my life because I know that this is just case closed.
It's like my dad is 86 and in failing health. And
sorry to hear that.
We aren't close. right? And this is not the dream dad had for me. Mm-hmm. I think he saw me as some kind of mover shaker for Jesus, because I've always been kind of crusader. You know, you and I have mm-hmm. that, probably that temperament, right? We're, we want to be out there waving the banners and changing the world. And so that distance that we have been sort of, you know, it's been 10, 12 years, that distance, I've often wondered, you know, when the time comes, have I already sort of grieved him? Will I feel it in my bones? And then do I have guilt for not feeling it if I don't? And it's a strange sort of internal monologue that's going on. I don't know. Has any of that happened with you? Like, I'm supposed to feel a certain way, but I don't know that I do.
Yes. And for me, I feel like I was in a very, I don't want to say beneficial because it was born out of abuse, but I was beating myself up emotionally for not feeling worse about it and for not conveying the proper emotions. And then I realized, wait a minute, this is exactly what was being used against me my whole childhood, was you're not feeling or acting the way you should be. This is the appropriate emotion. What are you doing? Feeling something different. So I kind of saw that as the last attempt to manipulate me emotionally. And I was able to turn it off after that, after realizing that, oh, wait, this is just giving that mindset power. And I don't need to do that anymore. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, I must say, I'm not in such an extreme position. We're sort of trying. Right. We're still navigating. You know, my family and I, we're doing all right. You know, we got baby steps. Everybody's, you know, on the surface getting along. There's that weird undercurrent. So I wasn't trying to align my situation with yours. I think yours was much more severe. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry it happened to you. I'm curious about what drives your desire to do what you're doing.
Well, so
we talked about the crusader thing. Is it a reaction to the oppression, the abuse, you know, all of that? Have you analyzed at all? What is this fire in my belly? Where did it come from?
Yeah. It's an interesting thought experiment for me. It certainly was not a part of the deconversion process. I, as somebody who was very curious and talks with people of all types. When I was in college, I learned a lot of different viewpoints of God and ended up becoming one of those like super woo-y progressive Christians who were like, God loves everybody, all paths lead to heaven. You know, I had so completely moved into this space of absolute acceptance. I didn't even believe in a tri-omni God anymore, a maximally great being, so to speak. I believed that God was vulnerable and didn't know everything. And the reason that there was sin is because he couldn't help all the time. And so I was rationalizing it to the point that I realized if I presented this faith, this dogma to any Christian, they'd be like, get out of here, you're not one of us. So I moved into this very hyper progressive space before realizing I left the farm, right? The farm is back there. I'm out here in the woods. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm not there anymore. The activism part came in when I moved from Portland, Oregon, where I went to grad school, to Columbus, Ohio. That was a shakeup. That was big because Ohio is a very conservative, very Christian. I was dealing with billboards all day, people trying to pray for me, very aggressively religious language around local politics. And all of this was happening around the same time of the Brett Kavanaugh nomination and the administration in general. So there was a lot of political pressure all at once, all of a sudden, that I linked directly to religious overreach. And so that was kind of the instigating force there. And then I went to the American Atheist Convention in Cincinnati, where I stalked you during breakfast. I apologize for that. You sat right behind me. I was like, what do I do? I can't walk away. I have to say hi.
I'm glad you did.
But I met the people from the ACA. They were like, hey, you should come down to Austin. You seem like you'd be good down here as an activist. So I did. And I was welcomed with open arms. So at this point, I'm still trying to figure out exactly what drives me, what that core focus is, but I can say for sure that it is not a reaction to my past, which is relieving for me.
I think it's good medicine for me. I mean, if you were to say you cannot talk about your value system, I think I would just die inside. There's something about me, you know, that I'm not passive. To a fault, you know, I think there's something about some people where they, you know, they're kind of passive and kumbaya and who cares. And I think some of that's a bit naive, right? Why can't you just leave people to believe whatever they want to believe? It sounds good on paper, but because beliefs translate into attitudes, translate into actions,
right?
This ripples out. I mean, your father had a belief.
Right.
And exactly. Why can't we just let him believe what he wants to believe? Results in the harming of his children.
Right.
And, you know, that's a tough thing to communicate to some people. You know, it does matter, right? People should get respect usually, but ideas have to earn it.
Right.
Your take?
Certainly. I think that I'm also very much not a passive individual. The best way to get me to do something is to tell me not to do it. So that's my whole life now is is basically that instinct. Oh, you don't want me to do it? I'm going to do it even better than you expected. But yeah, I think that saying, why do you care? Why can't we all just get along, is coming from a place of unexamined privilege. And we're seeing that in very many different areas, right? It's not just the religious sphere. It's in terms of, you know, sexuality. Well, love is love. Yeah, okay, that's good to say, but there's still, Trump right now is trying to get the Supreme Court to allow people of the same sex to be banned from adopting kids. Like, love is love, but that's still happening. And trying to, you know, push that all aside with a happy idealistic phrase is not helpful. The same, I don't see color, right? That sounds nice on paper, but you dig even a little bit deeper and you realize it's not going to cut it. So yeah, I think being able to push difficult conversations and uncomfortable worldviews aside is privilege, and it should be looked at.
It's when I was made uncomfortable that I busted out.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Discomfort gets you to move, and that's good.
In just a second, I'm going to ask V to talk about gender. Oh, and already the comment section is starting to explode. Everybody just take a pill. V LaBianca and I continue our conversation in just a second. Hang on. If you'd like to get the broadcast every single week without any commercials, and you'd like to get it a couple days early, become a patron. I'm so thankful for my Patreon supporters. If you'd like to become one, I would be your best friend forever. You can log on to patreon.com/SethAndrews. Continuing a conversation now with V. LaBianca, one of the co-hosts of Secular Sexuality and Talk Heathen. What kind of stuff do you talk about on Secular Sexuality? I know I'm a big fan of Daryl Ray. Had him on the show quite a bit.
And,
you know, he has sort of been at least near the nucleus of that. Can you talk to me about kind of the stuff you tackle?
Sure. We've been tackling some really interesting topics the last couple of weeks, especially. We also take calls, so a lot of the time, like last week, yesterday, we just spent the whole time taking people's calls, which was amazing and a lot of fun. But we talk about allyship, how to be a good ally. We talk about gender fluidity and what that means. We talk about being bisexual or pansexual or in some way attracted to more than one gender while in a cishet looking relationship. We had Shannon Q on for that episode, which was amazing, and we talked a little bit about what it feels like to be erased by the LGBTQ community because you look too heterosexual or too cisgender. And then, yeah, we'll talk about just about anything. If it correlates at all to sex, love, romance, gender expression, it's a topic for us.
That's a hot one. I mean, gender is a lot of, I mean, within the atheist community, certainly with religious circles, right? The difference between sex and gender.
Yeah.
And so I can already see the comment sections, right? People hear that and all of a sudden.
Wherever I go, hi guys.
Yeah, and I'm like, when did we lose the ability to explore, right? To start talking, as you would say, as someone who had been a journalist slash editor, let's get to the source. Let's examine. I know it's not popular on the internet to not escalate, but let us not escalate. Why don't you define what you're talking about for the audience? If you were had a caller on the show who was like, well, what's the difference between sex and gender and what's your perspective? Right. How would you respond?
Let's see, how do I put this in as few words as possible?
Because well, take your time. I'm good. Go ahead.
So the first thing I would preface with is I am not a biologist. I'm not a scientist. And even the scientists and the biologists don't fully understand sex and gender. The reason that there is so much controversy right now is because there is not very much science backing it up. We kind of figured out, oh, there are guys and there are girls and we're good. And there are some people doing some really interesting research into how sex is not binary, but rather bimodal, which means that there are two kind of bell curves that overlap a lot. And there are categories that we place people in, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there are only two options. So the idea that sex is binary, first of all, should be discarded. Science Vet on Twitter actually has an amazing thread on that. That was very useful for me. So sex, however, relates to biology. And there are many different ways to determine sex, chromosomal, hormonal, first and second sex characteristics, a whole bunch of things. And if you don't do DNA tests, you honestly don't know if you have XX chromosomes or XY chromosomes or some kind of hormonal fluctuation that might put you a little bit more towards intersex than you would be comfortable with. So honestly, I can say that I believe I was born female, but I haven't done enough research into my own body and gotten all of the tests to be 100% sure that that's exactly where I fall. Gender, on the other hand, is about expression and about how society sees you and treats you and interacts with you and things you are allowed to do and not do, what is considered acceptable and unacceptable, and just how you create your own identity. So I liken it to personalities. There, for me, are as many genders as there are personalities. And just because you met one person who was creative and angsty doesn't mean that you know all people who are creative and angsty are going to present in exactly the same way or be the same type of person. So for me, I do not ascribe to a specific gender. I go by they, them pronouns. I call myself non-binary, but really what that means is I like to play around in the middle somewhere, and I like to dress up super femme one day and maybe super mask another. But for me, it's about what do I feel most comfortable in? What feels like me? And a lot of the time that doesn't align to what we consider to be a man or a woman style of appearance.
I remember first getting into these conversations, and I still sometimes feel overwhelmed by them, V, right? I mean, I'll slip into a specific way of saying it, or, you know, because we both come out of, oh, penis male, vagina female. Yeah. And then, you know, if you're getting into the psychology of sexuality, and if there is a huge spectrum that is as varied as the people themselves, it becomes this overwhelming sort of cacophony of, holy shit, how do I approach this? Mm-hmm. And I think most disheartening to me is there are some who just shut down and will not talk about it, at least not in good faith. This brings us into things like trans issues and trans rights issues. And I'm amazed and shocked and appalled by the amount of bigotry I see within the atheist community. You know, we use find people who are atheists who are not just concerned about or they don't know about, but are vehemently anti-trans. Mm-hmm. I do not get this. Something you've experienced and spoken about on the show, certainly, right?
Yes. Although there's a strange thing that happens in comments. I will get very many vehemently upset atheist viewers on the shows who decide to try and make fun of my gender. They actually end up getting it more right than the people who are supportive. So they will call me, I've had, is V a boy or a girl that looks like a boy that looks like a girl? And I'm like, sure, yeah, that sounds about right. And they're attempting to be snarky, and I'm kind of okay with that. They play around with my gender, I play around with my gender, it's all good. It's the supportive ones who, well, very well-meaning, say, what a lovely young lady, she is so intelligent, that thank you, but also, so.
But if they don't know in advance, though, if they're not familiar with how you're approaching your own sexual identity at the beginning, they may be in good faith. I'm not necessarily talking about chatters here, but if somebody walks up and says, you know, who addresses you with a female pronoun in good faith, you don't freak out on that, right? I mean,
oh no, not at all. And there are people who are very close to me who still do it and get it confused. And I'm super chill about it. I think there are very few outspoken people who get very upset about it. And they are certainly reacting out of a place of hurt. But I think for the most part, most of the people that I know who go by other pronouns are just, yeah, okay, yeah, you got it. I can't expect you to know that my pronouns are Zer. You know, that's not something you have been taught, so I will tell you if you ask or if you make a mistake, but no worries here.
I mean, there is a learning curve, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something, as you mentioned, we're just sort of getting into. Ultimately, I just would like to see kindness dominate the conversations, even if people are a little overwhelmed. And, you know, we come out of kind of a binary background, right? It was either good or evil.
Yes.
In my world, it was Republican or Democrat, right? I used to be like, if anything Democrat was evil, I was a conservative. Anything liberal was evil, I was a Christian. Anything atheist was evil. Mm-hmm. And we sort of had these little pockets, and everything has to fit into these two little boxes. And if it doesn't fit, well, I'll just cram it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the idea of approaching this spectrum and nuance and all that stuff, for many people, I think they're just like, no, I need the box. The box gives me safety and comfort, right?
Exactly. So. And for me, the most frustrating thing is to see people who have left religion, who have done the work of deconstructing those particular boxes, fall right into other boxes. It's like, you're not done. I know it's exhausting. I know that there's a lot of work, but you can't just deconstruct one aspect and then think that everything else is going to stay the same. Opening that door more often than not, you know, knocks the whole house down. And it's scary, and I get it, but it's a necessary step of living in a way that is skeptical, is to question everything, right? Not just religion, not just politics. Like, go another step further. See how far you can push it.
V, have you become kind of a magnet for the other Vs out there? You know, the people who have gone through the abuse and sort of an evolution in so many ways? Are they tapping on your shoulder?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of people. I've only just started coming out on my own outside of ACA production. So still most of what I'm experiencing are people who are drawn to the ACA and may feel more connected to me as a host because of the things I've expressed. I'm also just now starting to develop my own persona apart from the ACA. And I'm seeing people show up, and I've been doing Facebook live streams on Thursdays before Secular Sexuality, and I'll get 20, 30 people in the chat talking about Star Trek and cats and all the things I love. I don't know any of them, but apparently I do attract a certain type of person.
But if you have somebody who has a similar journey and has had similar pain, they probably find comfort in your story.
Yeah, and that's why I tell it. It can be uncomfortable for me, and it has opened me up to some not so great feedback from people. But yeah, I know that when I was questioning everything when I was first starting this. It was the people on YouTube. It was the YouTube channels and the podcasters who were open about their experiences and how they saw the world that gave me the permission to start looking at that myself. So if I can give back in that way, I'm more than happy to.
I heard somebody, or they posted something online. I think I agree with it. It said, I post what I post, not necessarily to try to convince someone else, but to remind those who have the same value system that they are not alone. I don't know, I'm paraphrasing, but does that ring true for you?
Certainly. I also see myself as the one pinprick in a very, very tough bubble that most of my family still lives in. So if I can post something that, you know, might be common knowledge among the people I hang out with, if it sparks a conversation or interest or a question mark in the people for whom I am the only link to an outside perspective, I also consider that to be my role, again, as a journalist, bringing information to the people who need it.
So your family, I mean, they got to be looking around at you from the, you know, gallery. You know, they're looking in going, you know, alert, we have a problem, right? I mean, are they still devout or what's the story?
Yes, they are still very Christian. They have kind of gone in different directions in terms of what that means for them. So I could not tell you exactly where they all fall, but they are all still very religious in their own ways. They are, however, very supportive of me to a degree, right? I was back home for a holiday the other month, and everybody was there, and we were all kind of trying to catch up and being like, oh, what are you doing? What's your career like? You know, how do you spend your free time? And just kind of very, very subtly glossed over me and moved on to the next person because they knew, you know, they know how I'm spending my time. They know what I'm doing. And I had to sit my mom down later and be like, hey, mom, this is my life now. Like, this isn't college where in a year I'm going to graduate and this isn't going to be something we talk about anymore. I respect your right not to want to talk to me about this. That's fine. But I do want you to know this isn't something that's going to go away if you ignore it.
It's just a phase you're going through. One day you will return to the fold kind of thing, right?
Exactly. I think they're starting to realize now that that's probably not the case. But yes, it is very much of a, if we don't look at it, maybe it will go away situation. That said, they're very happy that I am happy and they can see that what I'm doing is motivating me in positive ways and making me a better person. So they are quick to acknowledge that, which is a lot.
It's common too, I guess, parents, you know, they have this dream for their kids. And they're like, one day when they grow up, they'll be this or this or this. And if you turn that on its ear, they sometimes look around like, what has happened to my child?
What is going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a time where they have to adjust. Sometimes it, you know, sometimes they get there, sometimes they don't. I think, you know, there's nothing like being true to yourself, right? I mean, V, you're at a point now where it's not like, I'm trying to be somebody else or live by somebody else's design. I get to sort of determine the parameters. I mean, that's got to feel really good.
It really does. It really does. I hesitate to talk about it too much because it quickly goes into a very evangelical, I'm free, hallelujah kind of bent. But it's really probably the most ironic and beautiful and terrifying things to realize that my entire childhood, I was dreaming of being free. I was told that I was free, and I was told that if I continued to be faithful, I would continue to be free, and one day I'd be in heaven, and I would have no more worries, and I would have no more worry about sin or Satan or any of these things. And then you look outside and you realize, I am that, though. Like, I got that now. Yeah. All that it took was leaving the religion that was telling me I wasn't free yet.
Gail Jordan at Recovering from Religion has this great way of saying, on this side of the wall, there's so much more light, air, and space. I mean, the place you and I were afraid of, we were terrified of when we were devout. Now you get here and you're like, I got elbow room.
You know, yes.
Like I have oxygen. One of the best parts is I don't sit around judging people like I did when I was in the faith, right? You just sit around and find excuses to be like, well, they're going straight to hell and they're not doing Christianity right. And their denomination is incorrect and they interpreted the Bible wrong.
So much brain space, right?
Permissive, you know, these ungodly types. It's sort of this weird piety that used to regurgitate out of us. And you know, when you give that up and you're like, we're totally different and that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a liberating place to be, right?
It really is. And it makes so much space in your brain for other things that are like helpful and important.
I need space in my brain, V. I need as much space. I need real estate up here in my brain. Anything you want people to know about you or your channel or anything else before we call it a day? I've really enjoyed the chance to hang out and talk, and I want people to just go deeper and sort of find out more about what you do and where you do it. Anything else been on your plate or on your mind that you want to throw out?
For sure. Well, as always, I will be on Talk Heathen and Secular Sexuality for the foreseeable future, so be sure to check me out there. I'm also putting together a merch store. I'm putting together a Patreon, so if you'd like to help me out as I start finding my own voice and finding the best way to help the community as an individual, you can go to patreon.com/VLaBianca. That's also where I update about my channel. That is in the works right now. I'm aiming for early July being the first episode coming out. And it's going to hopefully focus very much on kind of what we talked about, Seth, about journalism and skepticism and how we learn things. And it's going to be taking everything that I learned in school for $50,000 and giving it to the internet for free. So hopefully I can do some good with that degree.
I will include your Twitter handle in the description box. V's got a great story. Such a great attitude, and V is kind. And again, that's just so refreshing to see kindness sort of at the source going out. A genuine desire not to throw gas on every spark, but to help people and find understanding. That's why I really wanted to talk, is because, you know, I get you. Like, I really want to support the temperature of what you're about. I will put links in the description box. All my best with your new channel, the website, everything that you are doing and about.
Thank you.
And let's rendezvous and talk again soon, okay?
I'd like that a lot.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter for a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions. Log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.